Chapter 14. For the first 12 years of Gallius Rax's life, music was a thing that simply did not exist. Yes, the music of his surroundings played. Wind whistling through the stone spires, the jostling of rust-bone chimes made by the anchorites, the melodic hum of a speeder cutting a swath across the hissing sand. But real music? True music, orchestrated willfully by the hands and the breath and the sheer bloody desire of sentient beings? That was unknown to him. The first piece he ever heard as a boy plays in his chambers now. The cantata of Cora Vesora, an old Republic opera of a dark witch on an unnamed world who refused to become Jedi. But neither would she join the Sith. It is a tale of birth, death, and all the glories found between those poles. Love, passion, war, and above all else, revenge. Revenge against the Sith who took her loved ones. Revenge against the Jedi for standing idly by and refusing to protect her because she would not join their ranks. Revenge against the galaxy for being as imperfect and impure as she had feared. The tale itself was something he didn't learn until much later. The story mattered, of course, but as a child taking his first flight off a grim, dust-choked planet that he thought, or feared, was the center of the galaxy, it was the sound of the music that haunted him, now as much as then. The light pluck of the Modakur's strings, the crash and clamor of the dendodrums, glass breaking and remaking and breaking over and over again. The vibration formed of the choral ululations from the unglanded Takari singers, a vibration that can be felt as an intense buzzing in one's temples and jaw, a vibration that can make one feel almost drunk on it. He lets it wash over him, standing in the center of it, almost as if the music can pick him up and lift him higher. Rax is aware of someone in the room with him. Likely it's Sloane, here to ask him about the destruction of the scythe. She won't accuse him of anything. Sloane is too smart for that, though he fears that day is coming. He will not have the cantata interrupted, though. Not for her, not for anyone. So he stands, swaying gently, and he holds up an insistent finger, demanding patience above all else. It plays out into silence, and only then does he turn. It is not Sloane standing there. Rather, it is her aide, Adia Wright.
"Miss Wright," he says, "I am surprised to see you here, and not her."
"She chose not to come."
He lifts his brows.
"She discovered the destruction of the scythe."
Adia confirms with a nod.
"And she learned that I sent out a transmission."
"Both transmissions."
It is a shame that Admiral Sloane has not come to talk this through with him. He understands why, of course. She feels lied to. Because she has absolutely been lied to. And that deception will not end any time soon. It cannot end, because she cannot know everything. Not yet. If only she would trust him. An ironic statement, he knows, given that all she has on him are mounting reasons not to trust him. But leaders are like this sometimes. You must place trust in them, even when you are uncertain that they are making the right choice. No, not trust. Faith.
"Ray Sloane will come around,"
Rax says, suddenly confident. He reaches out and takes both of Adia's hands. Her eyes shine with veneration, though in there he sees something else. A conflict. Adia respects and admires Sloane, too. This is hard for her. Good. It should be.
"We do what we must. The sacrifice of the scythe was a necessary one. Besides, Commander Valent was conspiring with Loring. We cannot stand any more needless fractures in this, and he was too stubborn to be brought into the fold, not to mention incompetent.
Can I share this information with Admiral Sloane?
He pulls her closer, gently easing her so that her chin is on his chest.
Yes, you may, but not yet.
I should be getting back.
He can feel her heart beating against his own, faster now, a rapid's pace. Rax gently places a finger under her chin and lifts it toward him.
Will you stay the night again?
He asks.
You must. I insist.
He eases forward to meet her. He presses his lips against hers, cold against warm. The kiss of fire against a shard of ice. The scythe is destroyed. Commander Valent and all those on board are dead. And it's her fault. Or it was made to seem like her fault. There, on her comm, a message sent to the scythe from her station and with her clearance codes. Text only, no visuals, no audio. That message asked the scythe to respond to an alarm signal sent from a Prowler probe droid. Then someone went ahead and blocked all incoming messages from the scythe, so that distress signals from the destroyer failed to arrive. And finally, the last piece of a troubling puzzle, yet another missive sent out through heavily encrypted channels onward to the New Republic. That's him. That's her so-called advisor, Fleet Admiral Rax. He's been stringing along the New Republic as a character he called the Operator now for the better part of 3 months. But it seems he's more interested in maneuvering the Empire into cannibalizing itself, giving the fledgling Republic a much-needed edge. He's handing them the weapons and then shoving Imperials into firing range. Before, she could maybe excuse it. Certainly remnants of the Empire truly were out for themselves. May the stars help them all if someone like Pandion were to capture the Imperial throne. But this? The scythe? That was an execution. Because surely it was the Fleet Admiral who summoned the New Republic ships under the guise of the Operator. Him tugging their leash and giving those scum the scent of another good Imperial target. Thousands of soldiers are now dead because of it. And why? For what purpose? Shaking, Sloane paces her office, trying to figure out exactly that. Valent? He was loyal, was he not? Maybe that's an overestimation. She sits down at her holoscreen and pulls up all the information she has on the scythe and Commander Valent. Everything seems standard, but there. Wait. Valen didn't go to Naval Academy first, did he? He went to the officer school on Uiter, along with Grand General Loring. So that's it. Another rivalry extinguished. One more potential dissenter whose throat is metaphorically slit. Instead of trying to bridge the divide and lead from the center, Rax is happy to drift to the edges, and those who don't follow him will be shot like dogs. Sloane cries out in rage and sweeps everything off her desk. A tumbler of water spills and rolls away. She is left seething, her chest rising and falling, as she envisions marching into Rax's chambers and putting 2 blaster shots through his forehead, all for what he's done. This is not my empire, she thinks. But how to reclaim it? Exposing Rax is an option, but the consequences of that may not play out in her favor. First, she'll have to openly admit that she does not control this empire. Second, he's a war hero. And no matter who you are, as an Imperial, those medals matter.
third, the response might be an overwhelming shrug. So what, they may say? That he's a manipulator? Palpatine was too. In its earliest days, the nascent Empire grew strong precisely because he let the Republic and the Jedi destroy each other. And then, he simply seized the pre-existing war machine for himself, uniting the fissures in the galaxy under the Imperial banner. They might have faith in Gallius Rax's choices, however grim, however strange. Exposing him exposes her, too. Worse, it potentially pushes the Empire into its own internal civil war. It's time to stop dithering. It's time to head to Quan Chi and find the wreckage of the Imperialis. If droids remain, even in scrap, maybe she can find something, anything, that can shed light on who Rax is or what his true intentions may be. With that, Sloane launches up out of her chair, renewed with vigorous purpose. She strides to the door, opens it with a hiss. There stands Ferrik Abjur. He gives an obsequious smile.
We have another meeting regarding information dissemination, and we should prepare a statement regarding the loss of Arcanius. Oh, and it's vital we establish some vague sense of the future of the Empire. We can discuss the new breeding initiatives, for instance, and...
As he goes on and on, she nods gamely. All the while, Sloane feels like her boots are stuck in a mire, and the mud keeps pulling her down, 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 until her mouth is full of it, and her lungs are full too, and all she can do is drown in the muck as the Empire she loves slips away.